Hi everyone, it's Grace. Before we start our episode, I want to tell you about two things. First, the Where the Mountain Meets the Moon trilogy calendar I've been working on is finally out. It's available from the Eric Carle Museum bookstore, and if you purchase a book of mine at the same time, you'll get 10% off. The link is in the show notes. The second thing is that my other podcast, Kids Ask Authors, now has a Patreon page. Even if you don't listen to that podcast, becoming a patron helps this podcast too, since I produce both of them, and support would be greatly appreciated. And if you become a patron of that podcast, there are some really great perks, like the exclusive Random Question podcast only for patrons. On that podcast, I ask authors extremely random questions with always interesting answers. Don't you want to know what food Jason Reynolds can't bring himself to eat? Or what Jacqueline Woodson always buys at the grocery store? Become a patron of Kids Ask Authors to find out. The link is also in the show notes. Thanks so much, and now on to our episode.
Hi, I'm Albina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lin.
And we're Book Friends Forever.
We're childhood friends that grew up to be
a children's book editor
and an author and illustrator.
Welcome to Book Friends Forever, the vote episode. Every week we catch up with each other's lives, talk about what's on our minds, and share with each other what we're grateful for.
And check out our website, bookfriendsforever.com. The website will include more detailed show notes as well as links to the episodes.
And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy our podcast, please tell a friend about it.
So, Alvina, how have you been doing?
I am doing well. I'm actually back in Brooklyn for this week, as you know, because I stopped by Northampton on my way down, and we got to have like a nice little gathering with you and Libby and Anna.
The old Blue Rose girls.
You were only able to stay. Yeah, the former Blue Rose girls, or maybe still Blue Rose girls. Once a Blue Rose girl, always a Blue Rose girl. You could only stay for an hour, but it was still nice to sit down and outside and have a nice kind of brunch. And I ended up staying almost 3 hours. So there was a deer that kind of came and like stared at us for a long time. So maybe that was you in spirit staying with us.
So what time did you get into Brooklyn then?
I got in around 7. So there was some traffic in Connecticut, but overall it wasn't so bad. And it was such a beautiful drive. I mean, I wouldn't say that leaves are in peak season yet, which means that I think my drive back up next weekend will be even more beautiful, but it was just so beautiful. So that made it nice for sure. And I got to just listen to podcasts on my way down. So that was great. How about you? How have you been?
I was gonna say busy, but I hate saying that because I feel like I say that every single time. But
it's,
you know,
okay, if it's true.
It's true. I've been really busy, but in some ways really good because I'm painting now. And so I'm almost done with painting number 2. And it's been really lovely to paint. It was really funny is because these paintings are inspired by the illustration I did for the Children's Book Week poster two years ago. And it's basically my daughter. That illustration was my daughter in front of this very ornate wallpaper with birds on it, and all the birds were looking at what she was reading. And so that kind of inspired this whole book. So now while I'm painting this book, I'm really craving to decorate our house with wallpaper.
Oh, wow.
And so I've been looking into like removable wallpaper. So I'm like, yeah, maybe I could do like just one wall with wallpaper because I keep painting it. And I'm like, I kind of want to have that on the wall, you know? So I don't know if I'll actually go through with it. But right now that's kind of like my current obsession to figure out what wall I could put with removable temporary wallpaper because I feel so inspired by it.
Why temporary? Because you want to keep changing it?
Yeah, I don't I think temporary because I'm not sure if I would like to keep it forever because I really want to put like a really busy wallpaper up, you know? And also I'm a little nervous that it will not age well. I think wallpaper just doesn't age that well. And also temporary wallpaper is a lot easier to put up. You know, it's just like peel and stick versus like real wallpaper where it's like a big project. So I was thinking temporary wallpaper will be easier. At least I hope so.
That's true.
One of the reasons why I've been able to paint is because our school pod has been going pretty well so far, you know, knock on wood. Yay. Kind of thing. So it's going really well. So that's been giving me a lot of time to paint. And some of the things that we do to keep the kids feeling connected and things is we do some like activities on the weekends for all the kids to get together. And this past weekend, we went to this place called Mike's Maze, which is basically this huge cornfield that they've made into a maze. And this year, the theme of the maze was vote. And they had made the maze into like this very ornate, the words of vote, like a voting postcard. And as you go through the maze, there's all these you know, stops and games, and they were all like voting themed. And so it was really fun to bring all the girls there, and we went from like station to station, and they had all this trivia. But it also made me realize how little they actually understood about the voting process, and how like little we've really explained to them how the government works. It was a little eye-opening.
What were some of the trivia questions? Was it things like who was our first president, or was it
more? They were for kids, but they wanted kids to vote. You know, so they'd be like, "Do you think that voting election day should be a holiday? Yes or no?" You know, and then they would vote for that. And or do you think that all the states should vote the same way, you know, and they would explain how every state has different voting rules, you know?
Oh, interesting.
And so they would vote and see which way they thought was fair. And the girls were like really confused a lot of the times. They're like, wait, it is? Like, and it was just very interesting to me. You know, a couple years ago, I did that book, When You Grow Up to Vote. It was written by Eleanor Roosevelt, and I did the illustration. It's a reissue of the book that she wrote when she was alive. Obviously, she's not alive anymore. So, and I completely forgot I did that book until we did this maze on the weekend. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have to take that book out. And then I was thinking, I should get this book and I should give it to everybody in her class, you know? I was thinking about contacting her teacher and being like, you know, when you grow up to vote, like it explains government, it explains everything. I worry a little bit that I'm going to become like that parent that like, here, do this. You know, like I don't want to be like that parent that's really annoying the teachers, but because, you know, I did something similar for the Moon Festival, like tomorrow's the Moon Festival, do this. And now like a week later, I'll be like, vote, here's this book, do this. But at the same time, I feel like, you know, I guess they're all adults. They can just tell me to go away if they don't want me to, if they don't want my 2 cents.
Right.
But so it's been really interesting. And, you know, the whole thing made me think more and more about voting. And also, I think not just that, but it was also like this whole upcoming election. It's just been kind of making me feel really depressed.
Right.
I mean,
so you want to feel like you're doing something.
Yeah. You know, I have a lot of friends who go on social media and they get in arguments with other people about their political stances. And, you know, we'll have a text thread and they'll be like, oh, it's so annoying. And I finally said, you know, I admire you guys for doing that, but I have given up on trying to change anybody's mind on social media, basically because, you know, I can't even change my own father's mind. You know, if I could change my dad's mind, then maybe I might give people on social media, you know, I might give that a stab. But since I'm like helpless within my own family, I feel like it's not even worth it to try to to change people's minds on social media. I mean, I will put a stance if I think it's really important, but I'm realizing, like, I can't put my energy there, so I need to put my energy elsewhere. And I'm realizing that where I think the better place to put my energy in terms of this election is encouraging people to vote, people who don't feel like their vote matters, people who didn't vote in the last election, to vote this time, because they were saying, like, you're not going to change anybody's mind. The goal is to get the people who didn't vote to actually go out and vote this time. So that's been my new, I guess, mantra and idea of moving forward.
Well, I think that's the reason why this episode is called Vote, because of your weekend experience. But also, I think by the time this episode airs, Election Day will just be a few weeks away. So we thought this would be a timely topic. Do you have a plan for voting this year?
So I signed up for an absentee ballot, but it has not arrived yet, and I'm a little nervous because it hasn't shown up. But so if it doesn't show up, I will just go and to the voting place and vote in person. That will be, and I will wear a mask, and I will sanitize like crazy and do it that way.
Does Massachusetts have early voting?
I think they do, but I don't want to do anything until Election Day because I'm just waiting for that absentee ballot. Like, I don't want to do something. I should look it up and see. Like, I don't want to do something weird. Like, you were sent an absentee ballot and you voted twice, you know, something like that.
Oh, that doesn't matter.
Oh, okay.
As long as you only vote once.
Okay.
So at I least, might. Yeah, in New York.
That's oh, good. I'll check it in Massachusetts. And that's kind of annoying that it's different in every state, I think.
Another thing, like, so for the primaries, I got an absentee ballot, and then the day before I realized that it was supposed to have been postmarked, like, I thought I could have it, I could send it the day of the election, but it turns out you had to send it the day before. So I brought it into the polling place and I just dropped it off there, and they said that was fine. So
oh, good.
Anyway, so if you do get your absentee ballot and you're afraid that it might not arrive in time, I think that's an option too.
Do you have a plan for voting?
Well, so my plan was to be in Vermont during the elections. So I also requested an absentee ballot, and it arrived couple weeks ago, but unfortunately my ballot was amongst the 100,000 ballots, I think they were all in Brooklyn, whose return envelopes were mislabeled. so basically the return envelope it's supposed to have your name and your zip code or your address, and mine had someone else's name and address. So if I had voted and put it into that envelope, it would have been voided because that's wrong, an error. So they're allegedly sending everyone out new ballots. So I really hope mine arrives in time. If not, I might just drive down again to Brooklyn. New York does have early voting, so I could come like a weekend, maybe the weekend before, or
maybe you also could stop here. We could have like a
thing. That's true. And also Hachette Book Group this year has given all of their employees the day off for actual election day. So that's really cool.
That's great. Yeah, I think that was one of the things that when the girls saw that, they're like, they should. We get school off because the school is a voting place, so they get school off. So I was like, yeah, they should get work off too.
So do you remember the first time you voted?
So I actually have a very shameful voting history now.
It's now not that shameful.
Well, not just shameful in terms of voting history, but political affiliations, right? I will admit to them all now. So I grew up in upstate New York, which was really heavily Republican, right? And so when we were in high school, we had to declare what party we belonged to. And I had no idea about politics at all, but everybody else was Republican. My parents was Republican. Everybody was Republican. So I said, okay, I guess I'm Republican. And so I just put that down. And I remember one of the big reasons why I was Republican, because there was this guy that I had a crush on and I wanted to impress him. And he was Republican. Like, he was really like stouch about it. So I was like, yeah, me too. So for the first couple years of my voting life, I was a Republican. And then...
Well, I will say to our listeners who may be Republicans themselves, there's nothing wrong with either party. I will say, I do think there's something wrong with voting for Trump, but...
No, it's not so much that it was... being a Republican, it was the fact that it was being a Republican with no knowledge at all. That's what right. I mean. Like, yeah. And voting to try to, like, and choosing a party to impress a boy. That's really...
but I do think that's probably pretty common, I think, for a lot of kids to just kind of pick what their parents are.
That's true. And then, okay, so this continues my shameful voting history. I remember in school, we read this book, gosh, The Incredible Bread Making Machine on Economics, which was basically saying, like, all the social programs that the government has put in has messed up our economy, right? So, like, welfare and all those things, they're messing up the quote-unquote bread machine, you know? And so the only way we're going to get clear of it is to get rid of all these social programs, right? But I remember I voted for Bush because of that book, because I felt like, oh, we should have more social programs.
So, interesting.
But then I went to art school, right? And then started slowly being exposed to other people and other points of view and reading other things. And I can't say that it was like an overnight thing, but I do remember a couple of years after graduating, I was talking to Linda Wingerder. I was like, oh, what political party are you? And she's like, are you kidding me? I'm a Democrat. I'm poor and I believe people should be treated fairly.
That is certainly compelling.
I'm a Democrat, of course. And I remember that being kind of like, oh, I never thought of it that way, you know, and then I'll, you know, and, but honestly, even then, I think that was kind of a turning point in terms of like political party affiliation for me. But at the same time, I have to admit, like, I was not really that interested in politics. I really didn't think my vote mattered that much. I remember during that election with Al Gore and the Green Party, Ralph Nader saying, like, we need to have a third party because both parties are the same. And I remember saying, yeah, that's true. Like, my vote doesn't matter at all. We need a third party because Republicans, Democrats are the same thing. So they're all just corporate, big business kind of things. And so I think for many elections, I just never voted, honestly.
Interesting. Yeah, I was the same way. Well, not exactly the same way, but the same way in the sense that I didn't vote very consistently. And I was always on the Democratic side. But although I remember in college, I registered as independent. And I think it was because of that same feeling, like, you know, these two big parties, nothing really changes. I mean, I did feel like there was a distinction of the two, mainly in terms of social justice. So I always leaned left, of course, but I didn't really want to declare myself a Democrat until I moved to New York. And I kind of just felt like, well, in New York, you can't vote in the primaries unless you're registered for that party. So I was like, well, I'm definitely more of a Democrat than Republican. So I'll just, you know, bite the bullet and call myself a Democrat. But I also didn't vote in a lot of elections. I think I'm pretty sure I did vote for Bill Clinton. I'm not sure if I voted my first year in college or if it was after that, like when he ran as a incumbent. I didn't actually vote in the Gore versus Bush election, even though I felt very strongly, mainly because I was actually in New York for a conference, and that was when I was living in Boston. And so I thought I hadn't made plans ahead of time to vote absentee, and so I wasn't, you know, I just couldn't physically go to the polling place. And, you know, being from a blue state, I knew that my vote didn't actually really matter. Mm. I think that in more recent years. So I guess it's kind of like that the stereotype of like, oh, young people don't vote, right? Because yeah. we don't think it's that our vote matters or that it's that important.
Yeah.
So, you know, of course, I think after Gore versus Bush, like that's when I just started voting every time. No matter
I think that
what.
Was, you know, we did an episode on turning points. I think that was the turning point for me. It's like, ooh, I think I have to start voting like after
that. Yeah, because I remember I was in New York at a friend's place, you know, because the conference was over 3 days. So I just remember going to sleep when it hadn't been decided yet and just being so full of despair about it. Yeah, so that definitely motivated me to vote after that. So yeah, so how I think you mentioned a couple things, but how are you getting the word out? I guess this year, what are you doing? Are you doing anything?
So yes,
am I doing anything?
So this year I'm trying, I guess in some ways, to do penance for my for my youth, but also because I just feel so strongly this year. I'm trying to do a couple of different things. You know, the biggest thing that I just signed up for is the postcards to voters. And what you do is they send you a little message, you write the message, you send them a picture of it so that you can be an approved writer, and then they send you addresses, and then you send these postcards out to voters. And I guess that it's supposed to really work. They say the postcards work because, you know, if you get a postcard in the mail that's handwritten, like, it's so easy just to, like, glance and look at it, just to read it, like, because it's there. And the idea being every little time you can nudge someone to go vote, it's helpful. So I'm starting to do that. The thing that I've been doing that that's kind of making me feel happy is that I bought a bunch of postcards from the Pen and Ink Brigade. They're a group of women illustrators, and they did this whole series called The Blue Wave, where like each illustrator did their interpretation of like a blue wave. They auctioned off the art, and I actually bought one of the pieces, and then now they made postcards. So I've been using their postcards to send out to postcards to voters. So that's really fun. That's the thing that I'm mainly focusing on, and I'm trying to like get my friends to do it, like you.
Like me. Yeah. I think I'm going to sign up for that. Or, Anna actually mentioned a different website, which is called Vote Forward, but the website is votefwd.org, which is a similar idea.
Yeah. So I wonder what's the difference, but I'm sure no matter what it's all good. It's all about just,
I think Vote Forward, it doesn't have to be handwritten. I think they encourage you to write it by hand, and it doesn't have to be a postcard. I think it can also just be a letter. So, you know, the small difference, but it's the same idea.
And I've been listening to this podcast, which I just found randomly, is called, I think it's called Vote Plus One. And the plus and the one are both the symbols, nothing written out. So Vote Plus One. And it's just a really short podcast, like that the woman gives little tips on ways that you can get the vote out and or how to help with the election. And she was giving these tips like double check your voter registration and get your friends, you know, like, and get all your friends and family to double check their voter registration. And then they said, you know, display a yard sign. I guess it's supposed to really help because it just reminds people to vote, you know?
Right. Like it's hard to miss the fact that there is an election
yes.
coming up.
And like all the things that you can do just to remind people there's an election, don't forget to vote kind of thing is supposed to be really good. And of course, and also that name recognition. So the idea that you're showing your candidate and that name recognition over and over again. And then they had an episode on like make a smart donation. And then one of the places they recommended was this place called Swing Left. So when you give a donation there, it will take that money and divide it to all the places that that are winnable races, which I thought was a really cool way of doing it. Are you doing anything to get the word out?
I'm going to write postcards. But other than that, I mean, I have, I don't know if it's Swing Left is the one that I have done, but I have donated a recurring donation to an organization that, splits it to the kind of the Senate races that are swingable. So I've done that. I also have a recurring donation to a super PAC that's called Defeat by Tweet. And it basically, you can put in like, 5 cents or a small number or amount or large amount, whatever you want. And every time Trump tweets, you donate that small amount. Oh. So they kind of, I think it's weekly, they kind of tell me how much money I've donated. So it's been everything from like $25 to like $40 to, you know, depending on how much he tweets. And it's, you know, it's kind of, it's supposed to like de-incentivize him from tweeting, but of course it probably won't, but at least it goes, the money, if he does tweet, then there's some good that goes towards the left.
It's hard though, you know, I mean, we just talked about making a donation and all those things, and I do think it's a good thing, but there's a part of me that does not like to give donations to either party, honestly, because I feel like there's too much money in politics. I'm like,
it's true,
there's just so much, like, why do we have to play this money race in politics? Like, all that money could be used elsewhere and do so much good for the nation instead of us doing this race for money, like, who,
like, healthcare
more? Yeah. Like, we could definitely use that in other areas. So even though I do donate, I kind of donate while holding my nose because I'm like, ugh, I don't want to support this like money system, you know?
I know.
It's
so. But in a way, it's like you have to play the game because that's how it's played. But I hope that we can elect people who can change the game.
Yeah, but it's such a terrible game. It's like, I don't know. Like, so remember when I said I voted Republican a long time ago because of that incredible bread making machine book? And it's pretty much the same thing. The idea being like, you know, we put money in politics, we just have to keep adding more and more and more money, you know, and like until it's this thing. And they were saying that about social programs, but they were saying that as a theory in general. And I think it's kind of true, at least when it comes to politics. Like, we keep just putting more and more and more money, like, and they are saying like the best thing to do is just to turn off the bread machine, you know. And that's why at that time I had decided to vote, I think, for Bush. But like the idea, because back then they were saying how Republicans were like more fiscally conservative or whatever. But like it'd be interesting to see if we could ever turn off the bread making machine for politics, you know.
Yeah. So before we end, I just wanted to thank listener Jenny, who sent on an excellent Chinese article. They kind of outlined the split between first generation and second generation Chinese Americans. And we'll link to it on the show notes in case anyone is interested in it. But it is something that you could use to send to kind of your parents if you are Asian American or Chinese American, to see if they can kind of just kind of understand your point of view. And it deals a lot with race issues, and outlines, you know, what kind of what happened with George Floyd and all the kind of race relations in the United States.
Yeah, I thought that was really kind of Jenny. I mean, I think she heard us talking about how we were having a lot of problems explaining to our parents, like, our point of view. And she was saying how she's been having similar issues with her family, mainly because she felt like her family was only read articles that were in Chinese. So that's why she thought that this article might be helpful for us to send on to our families. So we'll put that in the show notes. So if anybody else has a similar issue, they might want to send that to their families.
Great.
Before we move on to Gratefuls, I want to say I'm planning to do one more thing to hopefully help get out the vote. And I'm hoping maybe I could do maybe some kind of auction or donation thing for with my Eleanor Roosevelt books, When You Grow Up to Vote. So please keep your eye on my social media and please support those two things that I'm hoping to do to hopefully help get out the vote.
Okay, and now we'll end as we always do with what we're grateful for. Grace, what are you grateful for this week?
All right, so what am I grateful for this week? Well, I feel like I have forgotten to kind of give these board books that I've done with Charles Bridge Publishing their proper attention. Like I keep forgetting to mention them, and I don't put them in my social media as often as I should. But I did these four board books for Charles Bridge Publishing. They're part of their storytelling math series, and it follows these kids through the seasons, but it also explains math concepts in a really fun way. Like when they told me that they wanted me to do kind of like math board books, I was like, oh, you mean numbers? But they're like, no, we want to show kids and their parents that math is in their everyday lives, and we want to show them it's not anything to be intimidated by, that it's ordinary, and that it's more than just numbers. So I did these math board books that are, I think they're super cute. They're like, one board book is like just the kids blowing bubbles. And through that, the kids learn that like when you blow through a heart shape, it's still a circle bubble or a sphere bubble, you know, like, and the difference between a flat circle and a round sphere, you know. And another one is just about like this girl going to a farmer's market, and she's trying to find what will fit in her basket. So I think that they turned out really, really cute. And what I'm grateful for about them is not only that did they turn out really cute, that they just recently got two starred reviews.
Congrats.
School and Library Journal gave them one, and the Horn Book gave them one. And those are the first two reviews we've gotten so far. So that's pretty nice that they got starred reviews.
That's amazing. Horn Book doesn't, I feel like the Horn Book doesn't star many books. So that's great.
Honestly, one of the reasons why I did these board books was because I was like, okay, I'd love to do some books that there won't be a lot of like pressure. Because I think earlier I was talking about like how I felt like if I don't get starred reviews, I feel like I let the publisher down. And that feels like a lot of pressure sometimes. So I was like, oh, I'll do these board books because board books never get reviewed. Like I didn't think. And then I was like, wait, they're getting reviewed. So now I'm like, oh, no. Because I didn't think board books were like those kind of books that ever got reviewed. But they do.
Well, but now the pressure's off.
Yeah.
So you have two stars.
Yeah. Well, what was the one line that I really liked in this School Library Journal review was because I'm always so insecure about my illustrations, and the line was like, illustrations have a sketchy quality, but their deliberately unpolished look adds to their appeal like an heirloom tomato in a pile of genetically modified perfect red spheres.
And, that's amazing.
Yeah, and I kind of like that because you know, I've talked about how I feel like I should move to the computer and how I'm always by hand. And I kind of feel like you can tell my stuff is really hand stuff because it kind of has this folk arty feel to it. And that kind of made me feel like, oh, well, I think when you put it that way, that is kind of cool. Like it's kind of nice to know that somebody like used their paintbrush and their fingers to paint it. And it feels very heirloom.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Anyway, what are you grateful for?
I'm going to name two things. So the first thing is, let's see. Last week, Chris Colfer's new book, A Tale of Witchcraft, came out. And, you know, Chris usually goes on a big tour where he meets with his fans in person. Obviously, that couldn't happen this year because of COVID. So instead, we did these three Zoom events, and we ended up hiring an outside vendor who specializes in these kind of events. So it was kind of slick, but also just really fun because the kids, or, you know, any of the kind of attendees, got to interact with Chris. So they had trivia questions. So they'd bring like three fans on at a time, and they would raise their hand if they knew the answer. And we did Stump the Author, where they kind of turn the tables on Chris and they ask him trivia questions about his own books, mm-hmm. and try to stump him, and then a Q&A. And so, you know, it was just really fun just to see the kids. I mean, and some adults, but just, of course, you know, the kids are really adorable and sweet. And I don't know, it makes me feel good to see how many kids out there have read and loved his series. So
Yeah.
I'm grateful for that. In fact, my cousin's son just texted me and he said, I just got the new book.
Aww.
So that was sweet. And I'm also grateful to be back in Brooklyn and that I still love Brooklyn. It's funny because a lot of people are like, so I think because they've seen how much I've fallen in love with Burlington because it's so beautiful that I think some people worry that, you know, I'm not going to love New York anymore. But that's totally not the case. I mean, I just really love the city, and I feel like I always will. Like, this is where I want to basically grow old and live, you know, the rest of my life. So, you know, Vermont is really lovely during a pandemic for sure. And just, I mean, I have to be grateful. You know, it sounds odd to say I'm grateful for the pandemic because I'm definitely not grateful for that. But I guess I'm grateful for this opportunity to live somewhere else for a little while because, you know, having a desk job, that just wasn't feasible. So the fact that I can work from anywhere right now, that we're doing this work from home period, I guess I'm grateful for that opportunity. So there you go.
Great.
Thanks for joining us. And thanks to Hachette Audio, Little Brown Books for Young Readers, and Alex at PC Work Studio for producing and editing this podcast. You can find me at Planet Alvina on Twitter and at Alvina Ling on Instagram.
And I'm at Pacey Lynn on both platforms. We love hearing feedback, so keep tagging and messaging us on social media using the hashtag BookFriendsForever or send us a message via our website, BookFriendsForever.com. You can also see more detailed show notes there.
And if you have any suggestions for future topics to cover, please let us know. And of course, please remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And if you like this podcast, please tell a friend about it. I'm Alvina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lynn.
Have a great week.
And don't forget to vote. Don't forget to make sure you... Don't forget to make a plan for voting.
Yay.
Bye.